Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema here with Benjamin Solak, recapping the 2019 NFL Draft. Ben, it was a lot of fun. The weekend, it seemed like, flew by and took forever, both at the same time. I don't know how it was possible, but I feel like only in the draft world is something like that was possible. But we had a blast. If you guys tuned into the live show at any point over the weekend, whether it was in the first round, second round, sometime on day three, whether you had just clicked the link for a couple minutes or you were with us the whole time, thank you. We had a blast doing it. We had such a good time being in Nashville. It was such a great host city. STK was great to us. Under Armour was great to us. We had that little combine there, which I hope none of you saw the results of, because I am absolutely not athletic. But no, we had such a great time over the weekend. And Ben, we got to get right into some of these team recaps. Are you ready for it, man? How was the weekend for you? Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy Nashville?
I'm sorry, Trevor. I can't hear you over the sound of the Sixers splitting the first two games with Toronto. And now with a two-game homestead to go up 3-1 in the Eastern Conference semifinals. I can't even hear your question.
Ben, it's an NFL draft podcast. I'm going to need you to get it together here, brother.
Sixers and six. Listen, are you ready for the NFL draft tie-in?
I'm here for it, yes.
I produced 2016 Contextualized Quarterbacking. I wrote the introduction to talk a little bit about the portfolio and what goes into it, and so on and so forth. And when I signed off the intro, I signed it off. Like, thank you so much for opening us. I hope you find it valuable. Sixers and six, Benjamin Solak. And nobody has said anything. I don't think anybody read the intro, but I snuck Sixers and six in there. And it's going to come through.
As somebody who has recently written a 2020 mock draft that no one read the intro paragraph to, I can attest to the fact that nobody reads the beginning of anything.
Let me guess, you set the order on Vegas Super Bowl odds and everybody ignored it and yelled at you for where you had their team. Yes or no?
You're a smart man. All right, let's get into some of these previews. We're going to start with the AFC East, and the team we're going to start off with is the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo ended up taking Ed Oliver with their first pick at 9 overall. Ben, there was a lot of speculation with Ed Oliver, I think, throughout the year. This is truly a roller coaster with Ed Oliver's draft stock. I think we overuse that phrase a lot, talking about when things are up and down, but man, it seemed like that was truly the case with Oliver. Oliver was the consensus number two, number one even overall pick last August and September. Then all of a sudden there was, hey, how much does this guy weigh when he plays? Is he going to be able to be a full-time D tackle? Is that possible? Then you saw his name drop in some mock drafts all the way to sometimes in the 20s. We saw Ed Oliver's name. Then the draft process rolls around. It starts rising a bit. He has his pro day. He blows it up. People then thought right before the draft, hey, Ed Oliver could go number three overall to the New York Jets, which would have truly been like a full circle thing. He ends up not going there, ends up going number nine to the Buffalo Bills. Ben, what'd you think of this pick? What'd you think of Ed Oliver's kind of wild ride throughout the draft season? And what do you like about it for the Bills?
Yeah, so I was one of those fellas who had him potentially falling into the 20s. I had to really walk Eagles fans through when I was writing for, you know, my fan base, the Eagles. I had to really walk through the fact that, like, yeah, like, there are a lot of teams in the top 10 who aren't locked in on Oliver. You know, they're not sold on him. Now, obviously, the closer we got to the draft, the more clear it became that there were teams who were willing to go for Oliver in the top 10, the Bills being one of them. It's the biggest need. It's an elite player. And critically, in my opinion, it also is different than what they have. Right now, the starters are Starlo, Tulele, and Harry P., your old Harrison Phillips. And you just can't – you have no pass rush there. And also, you don't even really, in my opinion, have a three technique there. Lotulevi and Phillips are both better over the center as one techniques. And so I think that Oliver, perfect fit, perfect need, going to be a huge impact, immediate starter for them. I mean, this was dream situation
I don't think that Ed Oliver would have been a great fit for a lot of teams in the NFL, but I do think the Bills were one of them. And I also think that – if the Jets would have traded, you know, I wasn't bought in on the top five hype when it came to right before the draft with Oliver, but I did think that he was real. I thought he was still going to go top 10. And the reason I thought that is because, you know, if the Jets would have traded back with some teams to move up for a quarterback, perhaps even the Giants at number six, I think the Jets would have taken Ed Oliver at number six. I also think that the Lions would have taken Ed Oliver had TJ Hawkinson not been there. Then the Bills obviously take him at 9. I also think the Falcons really wanted to trade up for Ed Oliver.
Yeah, that we knew.
Just didn't end up happening. So I thought that Oliver was always going to be a top 10 pick, but I thought it was between 5 and 10. I didn't think it was anywhere higher than that. And so I really like the fit for Buffalo. I think it was good. Your OT1, my OT1, Cody Ford goes in the second round.
All truth, no lies detected.
You know, this is, I actually really like this fit. You know, this is a team that, sure, they've got Josh Allen and they're going to want to pass the ball a little bit more, but this is still going to be a run-based team, I think, especially next year and moving forward. I think Cody Ford's a real mean offensive tackle / offensive guard hybrid. Not sure where they're playing him. Hopefully they're playing him at tackle, but
tackle, they've said in post-draft pressers, Cody Ford's going to play tackle for us. Smart team.
The Lord always provides the way that he needs to in these situations. So Cody Ford getting a chance to play tackle. I like it, man. I really like this pick. Then Devin Singletary went in the third round. What do you think about Singletary? Do you like Singletary?
Yeah, so I've called Singletary my most frustrating, my most difficult evaluation this year because simply – Like you know me, just in terms of like the scrappy little guy, the little engine that could is gonna really appeal to me, and I like that from a scouting perspective. I really like guys who have such a hot motor, and like they called him motor. So like, let's not, you know, mince words here. Like, the dude was one of the highest ever players in the class. But watching his film, I just said to myself, I just don't think this play style is gonna be able to stick at the next level, especially when he tests poorly, and then he tested poorly, and it was just like, you know. I ended up my running back 5 because my grading system does all the work for me, but he makes me nervous. He really
he's
does.
A true scat back, right? I mean, like, this is a dude who's not going to – I don't think he's going to break a lot of home runs for you. He's not going to even break a lot of tackles, but he's a dude who's shifty. He's a good change of pace back, and I think he's going to give you a lot of effort in what he does. He also loves Publix chicken tender subs, and if anybody is listening to this who's down in the South and is blessed to have Publix near you, they already are Devin Singletary fans by learning that he is a
remember that one time I told you I've never been to Publix.
And you know, we need to fix that. You're coming into Charlotte, right? You're coming into Charlotte for Joe's wedding
next weekend, you and me, man. Yeah.
Okay, all right, we're going to Publix and you're getting a chicken tender sub. It's happening. And then you're going to tweet at Devin Singletary and you're going to be like, hey, good luck this year, man, really rooting for you all the way. Dawson Knox went in the third round. Kind of like that.
That was such a transition.
Yeah. Dawson, that's why they pay me the big bucks, man. Dawson Knox going to...
Let me ask you this about still the early picks of the past two we brought
up.
Sure,
okay.
The Bills totally retooled their offensive line, right? I mean, so you have like Deion Dawkins is the starter that you had and you like him. And I was a big Deion Dawkins fan coming out of Temple, really. He's part of the brand. But Quentin Spain, undrafted free agent, or unrestricted free agent from Tennessee. Mitch Morris, free agent from Kansas City. Spencer Long, they bring in Adrian Waddle, they bring in from England.
Yeah.
But then Ty Nasecki, who's the guy who, like, we've all, like, you know, is that third swing tackle in Washington. Everybody's always, like, you know, huge Ty Nasecki fan. Ty Nasecki's the man. Is Cody Ford, it's going to be very interesting to figure out where Cody Ford fits in, because I'm assuming he's that right tackle. I'm assuming that means Nasecki's a backup. I'm pretty sure they gave him, like, a multi-year deal that is not small. So I really love the work they did on the offensive line, but because Cody Ford's a bit of like a guard tackle, you know, potentially can play both, don't really know exactly where his best fit is in at the league, like, they have some serious work to do at camp in quickly figuring out the new rotation that's best for them, because they have so many new guys. If you do too much time trying to mix and match, you're gonna have no continuity come week one, and no matter what sort of talent you have on the line, at least in my opinion, your lack of continuity, you're still going to give up sacks. So, like, I think that's a big thing they've got to pay attention to on the offensive line. So many new bodies, you really have to make sure you get it right quick and you give them time to play together.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. But remember, Buffalo was one of these teams that had a lot of cap that needed to spend it, right? And so having these offensive linemen that you deemed as potential starters, even if you went and drafted one, it's a good problem to have. And so – Even though I think that you're right, the contract says that a couple of these guys might be starters that end up being backups, maybe even the majority of the year, this is a good problem to have if you're Buffalo, especially because you know there are going to be offensive linemen that go down. Experience sometimes weighs a lot in these situations. You know, when you have a guy like Cody Ford who's coming in, hasn't played in the NFL before, perhaps there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve there for him. It's a big safety blanket. And I think that they were smart, Buffalo was, basically spending a ton of cap even on areas where they knew they might be drafted early, such as offensive line. And so I'm with you. It's going to be interesting to see where they put a lot of these quote unquote best five and see where these guys end up. But I really like the group overall that they were bringing, especially from a depth level. You're a guy who's seen what it's like when offensive linemen get hurt and you got to play some of these backups, as am I, looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers over the last couple of years. This stuff happens all the time. And so it's not always just a, hey, you know, you might have signed too many offensive line. You know, you never know with injuries. And so I think that Buffalo did a really good 100%. Job creating a safety net for them. I can't spend too much more time on this team because we got to move on to the other ones. But Dawson Knox, the third round, Voshon Joseph in the fifth, Jaquan Johnson in the sixth. 1, 2, 3. I really like these picks, actually. These are players that there's some parts of their game that I saw flashes with that I really liked, especially in as day three picks as the last two guys were. And then obviously I'm a pretty big Knox fan. Everybody who listened to the podcast knows that. What are your thoughts on it? Got any thoughts on Voshon or Jaquan or Dawson?
Yeah, like Voshon as a player, I think that they knew their back seven of their defense was fine, and they didn't spend a ton of capital on it, and that was the right way to go about that. So I appreciated that. My big question is, you're still going into the season with Jerry Hughes, Trent Murphy, and Shaq Lawson as your three outside rushers. Only guy you added was Daryl Johnson, the NCAA kid, and to me, edge was a much bigger need for them on my evaluation. So I'm curious to see, obviously you added Oliver, but how much has the pass rush improved, especially on the outside? So that was the biggest area I think they overlooked.
We're going to go to the Patriots next. Patriots went in the draft with 12 picks, I think, and I thought that they were going to trade up a little bit and get more towards 8, final numbers 8, and end up being 10. Which, I mean, some of these guys just aren't going to straight up make the team. Like, they don't have enough.
Yeah, they're not going to. Yeah, exactly.
So, little weird there. But N'Keal Harry at the top, Juwan Williams in the second round, then Chase Winovich, Damian Harris, and Yanni Kajus in the third. So, that was their first 2 days in the draft. And honestly, I think my least favorite pick there is Juwan Williams just because of how high it was and how not athletic he is. But wait, they picked Juwan Williams over Greedy Williams, right? I think.
Yes, they did.
45, yes, right? So Williams wasn't there. And so that's a bit of a reach there. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on those five guys they picked in the first 2 days? Is there a guy that super stands out for you?
Right. I mean, like, this is, I think, to me, a situation where, like, if I reorder this first three rounds, it makes a lot more sense to me.
So, like, you know what I mean? Winovich went in the second.
Yeah. I mean, I would have said, like, you know, if you take Winovich first, you think Yadni with the second, and then like N'Keal, Damian Harris.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, and then Joe won later. So I wasn't super high on N'Keal. But just to me, like, they didn't pick the best player super early, you know what I mean? And so I like what they did with the top five. Winovich is such a Patriots player. I had a mock 32 to them in my final mock draft.
So you just wanted to be right there. You just wanted to be right.
I mean, there's that. There's also, I just think that they overdrafted N'Keal Harry and Joe Juwan Williams. But you're right, Trevor. You found me out. I don't see Joan making a big impact for them early. I don't see Damian Harris being a big impact player for them. I do see Yanni Kajus being a guy who, you know, there's also some guard tackle conversations with him in terms of where he might fit best. So I'm sure they're going to work on that. And you always trust the Patriots with offensive linemen. N'Keal is really interesting because I think they're hedging the Josh Gordon bet. But if Josh Gordon comes back next year and plays, how much playing time is N'Keal going to get? I think barely any. I don't know what he does, what he brings that they don't get from. They've got Dorsett, and they've got Edelman, and they've got Josh Gordon. Like, wait, N'Keal's fourth out of those guys for me.
He's gonna play over Dorsett. Get out of here.
Or Philip Dorsett?
Yes, he's gonna play over Dorsett. Come on.
No way. Not first year better play than Philip Dorsett. Philip Dorsett killed it for him last year.
I'm just letting you know he's gonna play ahead of Philip Dorsett.
This is the Patriots, man. The Patriots do the weirdest nonsense with their rookies, all right? Byron Coward's going to get more snaps than N'Keal Harry. That's just like the way they do things.
That's not going to happen. Okay, wait. I got to talk about the Jared Stidham pick. Fun fact here.
Okay.
Jared Stidham, Damian Harris, very good friends, childhood friends, played in the same Little League together.
That's nice. I'm glad that they can be pals.
Yeah, now they're Patriots. Now they're Patriots pals. So it's pretty cool.
Gross.
What do you think about Jared Stidham? Where was he for you? What QB ranking was he for you?
He was the last draftable quarterback I had.
Okay, and so picking him in the fourth round, not great.
Not great. I mean, but like as far as like developmental guys who were still on the board, it was him or Tyree Jackson in terms of players who have the physical traits of a starter. So it was, you know, to pick one of the two. And obviously they prefer Stidham. And yeah, Stidham is a guy like you talk about it, like, you know, ball comes off his hand great and everything like that. I do understand why they're doing this, you know what I mean? Like Brady mm-hmm. will be gone within the next 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. Let us all pray, knock wood, whatever. So they're gonna keep cycling young guys in, right? They had Edling last year they bring in. This year it's Jared Stidham. They're going to draft a day three guy next year. And they're going to keep doing it. And you're going to see if you can get one right and ease that transition. And so that doesn't surprise me. The developmental guy they drafted that really excites me is Yelta Frohol, the Arkansas center. This is a guy who started 2 seasons at left guard, the most recent season at center. He's only been playing offensive line for 3 years. And he really has some nice translatable qualities, especially in a phone booth and tight areas and pass protection. On jump sets, I think he's strong, and that's something the Patriots like to do a lot with their interior guys. And so I think that he has a lot of Patriot-like qualities to him, and I think that with some improved strength and conditioning and maybe with some better footwork, he's a real starter in this league. And again, like if you trust an offensive line coach to get a guy there, it's Scarnecchia. And so Frohol is the late-round guy who I think is a lot of fun for them.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes plenty of sense. I think, you know, when I looked at the Patriots draft – like I said, I think they could have done a better job navigating their picks. Not even knocking the players that they chose. I just like, they can't roster all these guys. So to me, by not getting to like 7 or 8 picks in the draft from 12 or whatever they were at, that's kind of a little bit of a failure to me. I don't know.
Right, and they were like they were trying to trade back from 32. They're trying to work a deal with Cleveland.
Like, what are you doing, dude?
It's the luxury of being so good at coaching and developing that you could be like, you know what? It's okay. It's just the draft. It doesn't matter. Meanwhile, like other teams, you know what I mean? Like this, like the only opportunity to save your franchise.
Yeah.
But for the Patriots, like, listen, we could just, you know, it's like pick whoever you want. Yelta's a cool name. Aaron Carr was a 5-star recruit. Jake Bailey looked good kicking it at Stanford. Let's get it, man.
That's a very good point. Let's move on to the New York Jets here. They end up taking Quinnen at 3.
Best draft of this division, second best draft for this conference against my board.
You know, I brought up that the Jets right at the end of our live stream. I said the Jets had a really, really good draft. I really think that.
Quinnen at 1. Did Kyle shoot you down? Because he did with me when I said it. Kyle was like, no.
Well, I like all the players that they drafted, so I don't know how Kyle could have possibly said that. Let's start with Quinnen, though. Quinnen, your player 1, my player 1. They get him at 3 overall. Here's the question. Would the Jets have taken Bosa over Quinnen?
I mean, like, they probably have a bigger need for Bosa, so maybe.
Well, I want a definitive answer from you right here on the pod.
Okay.
Would they have taken Bosa over Quinnen?
Yes.
What idiots!
Idiot! But they didn't. Bosa was gone.
Colossal moron!
Moron! But they took Bosa, or they took Quinnen, dang it. And that's what matters is they got the best player of the draft at 3, and they have the scariest interior front for good old Greg with 2 G's, and they're all going to put their testicles in the C gap, and it's going to be great.
You know, I really hope Ja'Kai pans out, man. His tape
right.
is
so that's,
his tape
that's
is
the
so
thing
much
is
fun.
Like this draft, that's the pivot of this draft, right? It hinges on Polite. Like, if not.
And Polite got picked 68 overall, so it's not like he was even like. It's not like he was that much of a reach, you know?
Exactly. And I, so like with like, you know, red flags factored in and whatever, Polite ended up for me a late second value. And this is like top of the third, right? And so like, that's right where I would have been hitting on Polite as well. Mm-hmm. In terms of like, we just have a good football player. Like he's an objectively good football player. And so if you can just say like, listen, you're on a team now. There's no more combines. No more this, no more that. Just keep your weight where it's supposed to be. And we're going to let you get after the passer because you're really good at it. Can you do that for us? And if Pelé can buy in just to that level, then you've got yourself one of the highest impact edges in this class in the third round.
Yep.
Huge value. So I say I love this class. Well, that hinges on Pelé being more than just like, you know, a green mark on my spreadsheet when I do the math. Like he's got to be the person Pelé has got to be locked in. So you can say the same thing for Chuma Edoga. Chuma Adoga also has some attitude concerns. The offensive tackle out of USC, they took a pick 92,
right,
which a third round pick. Like they put a lot of money into, like they put a lot of capital in him, right? They invested in him with a day two pick for a guy who has some attitude concerns, for a guy who does have a bit of a love hate relationship with the game and with play weight, et cetera, et cetera. Like he really shaped up this year, added a ton of weight and got ready for the Senior Bowl and showed out, but like he hasn't always been that guy at USC, and so they had to do their work on that. So they did take some gambles on really talented guys who have a bit of off-field concerns.
They're day three guys, and I know you love one of them, maybe both of them. Trayvon Wesco is one, your boy.
My hero.
And Blake Cashman is the other. Not sure how high you were on Blake Cashman, but those two guys there in day three are a big reason why I love the Jets class overall, because I thought that Blake Cashman, who was my LB4, and granted a weak linebacker class, but getting him in the fifth round I thought was awesome. And then certainly Trayvon Wesco, a guy that you and I have talked about as a player with ideal size from the tight end position, gives you that three down potential as a blocker and potentially as a receiver. So I thought that they did a great job on day three as well as the first day and second day of the draft. So I think the Jets had one of the most complete drafts. What are your thoughts on some of those late guys?
Right. So, like we were saying, I'm a huge fan of Wesco, and everybody was being big old spoil sport on the stream. And, like, oh, you know, he doesn't have a downfield receiving threat. I don't care. What he does in the short to intermediate area, his ability to break tackles, surprising shiftiness, surprisingly good route runner, especially for a guy who's 275 pounds, gives you amazing inline blocking ability. Like, I'm not concerned with it. It doesn't stress me out whatsoever. I think he's a great tight end. I don't want to say tight end too, but he's a great guy to have on your team if you're going to play multiple tight ends. And they have Chris Herndon, who they selected last year in the third round, I think, out of Miami, who is a guy who brings a better downfield route presence. And so they have the tight ends they need to be, I think, really successful feeding that position. Not dissimilarly to the Jets. The only complaint I would have with this draft class is I thought – they had a big need at corner with what they currently have on the roster.
Yes.
Right. You bring in a guy like Brian Poole who's going to be playing your slot, but I don't think that that's a long-term option. The only investment is Blesswan Austin, who's really a high-weight speed developmental type out of Rutgers. So you're limited. You have six picks. You take some gambles on some really high-upside guys at huge positions of need. I don't dispute that at all, and that's great. But, you know, eventually, you know, there are always positions that fall through the cracks. For the Jets, it was corner. And they've been struggling to get the corner position right pretty much since Del Rivas left the first time. So I wish they had invested some better capital into that.
I was looking to see if Amani Arawarie was there when they picked Austin, but he wasn't, because that would have been like one hell of a draft class if they somehow got him.
And he was round five that he went. And
right.
He would have definitely been available when they picked Wesco, and would have been available, I think, maybe when they picked Cashman, and both of those guys – I would take Arawarie over them 100 times.
He wasn't available when they picked Cashman, so they would have had to pick him in the fourth.
I mean, Wesco. I love Wesco to death and back, and I would have picked Arawarie over him 12 times out
of 10. Sure. We still have not figured out what happened with Arawarie, have we?
No, just teams are cowards and they're wrong, and they should read thedraftnetwork.com.
You know what? Okay, great. Miami Dolphins. Josh Rosen.
It's the best draft that you can't see.
It is truly the best draft that you can't see. That's a really good way to put it. What did you think about how Miami navigated this whole trade with Rosen? What do you think of Rosen being in Miami? Let's just talk about that. I mean, because we'll get into Christian Wilkins and the other guys in a second, but let's face it. The Josh Rosen addition for what pick was it? 62, 68, something?
It was for 62. It was for whatever became Andy Isabella, okay? So, big W.
So, Josh Rosen on this Dolphins team. Talk to me about it.
Fantastic. Chad O'Shea is the offensive coordinator there in Miami. Now, Patriots wide receiver coach, assuming he's going to run the Earhart Perkins, probably some West Coast concepts, really quick stuff, spacing, and let Rosen just be super accurate. Rosen will probably take some more snaps under center now, which I think will be a huge advantage to him because he's got really crisp footwork. Really great at marrying the timing of route drops to his drops. The timing of route concepts to his drops, which is all tremendous stuff for Josh. So good fit for the player, good fit for the team, amazing value. I think the number one competitive advantage in the league right now besides Bill Belichick and the Tom Brady, you know, team-friendly contracts, is Josh Rosen for the next 3 years. I mean, it's even cheaper than rookie quarterback contracts because they're not paying his signing bonus because Arizona's on the hook for that, right? And then what I think the other thing, and this you can debate whether or not this is good or bad. I think it's good. There's no pressure-sized expectations on Rosen. You know what I mean? Like if Rosen is bad, if Rosen's just like not good in Miami at all, well, guess what? They're going back to the Tua tank, and it's just business as usual. It's exactly what they planned. And on the flip side of that, you probably I was super motivated to do well because of what happened to him in Arizona. So I think even like from just like a looking at the person perspective, I think it's great news for Josh. Great news, and that you know subsequently is great news for the Dolphins. I mean, they stared the Dolphins down. Or they stared the Cardinals down with the potential of trading pick 48 and ended up lasting through that, you know, that stare down, lasting through that game of chicken, and ended up only trading them 62 because the Cardinals so badly needed to offload this guy. I mean,
and not only did they get it for 62, they also added another pick in the 2020 draft because they got a second rounder for moving down.
Exactly. And that's the thing is like so often I think we see like very from the outside very obvious personnel moves and we're like, why aren't you doing this, general managers? And the reality is like sometimes like patience in the long game can really pay off. And the Dolphins waited out it always made sense. Rosen to the Dolphins always made sense. And they waited on it for as long as they could. And they sent 62 for this and what's likely going to be a pretty high 2024. I mean, that's a coup. It's a total coup. And it was because of the patience shown by Chris Greer. So like that to me is very laudable and very notable. Next time we go to criticize personnel decisions, which I'll be the first to do because I love to do it. It's important to remember that sometimes you get like this patience can really pay off.
Yeah, no, those are great points. I mean, we take shots at GMs all the time, but this was a great this is a great job by the Dolphins, making sure that they weren't going to get out leveraged by imaginary leverage, really, because they held all the cards, and it was up to them to know that, to find that and know that. And I think they did a great job. Christian Wilkins, they picked him at 13. I've said this for like a month and a half. Christian Wilkins is not getting out of the top 15, no chance. And it ended up happening. He ended up going number 13 overall. Do you like the fit? Do you like the role that he's going to have in this Dolphins offense? I mean, like, I love Christian Wilkins as a player, man. I think he's going to be awesome. He's going to be a really great start for Brian Flores and being a centerpiece there for him. But what do you think of him as in terms of the rest of that roster and where he's going
to
fit in?
Yeah, honestly, like, it's not my favorite pick to me just from the player himself just on field. I think 13 isn't – he's not worth 13. You know, to me, he was a mid-20s player on my board. I get the value of interior defensive line for sure, and they clearly needed it. I mean, you look at Miami's depth chart, you can hardly name some of the players that are on this team, man. Like, we cover the draft. We should know bad units because usually they're filled with young guys. And it's like, all right, Devon Godshaw, I know him, right? Akeem Spence, I know him, but then it's like Vincent Taylor, Jamal Wiltz, Joey Mbu, Jameis Pittman. Like, it's just people I just objectively don't know who they are. And so, like, that's the state of this defensive line. So, Wilkins adding it to a huge culture guy, character guy, locker room guy. That's going to matter to Brian Flores, and I get that. To me, it was too high of value as far as what I evaluated Wilkins as on my board. They only made two value picks for me, and that was Dieter at 78, Wisconsin guard, tackle, center, whatever the heck you want him to be. And then Myles Gaskin, all the way at 234, their seventh round pick, who may or may not even make the roster. Everybody else knew was big old reach, big reach.
Yeah. Wilkins and Dieter are honestly the only two picks that I liked. I mean, the other guys are just...
I will not stand for this Myles Gaskin slander.
I mean, I don't think Myles Gaskin's that good.
Good, Trevor. Like, interesting story.
Okay, great. Thanks. I thought Gaskins was going to be like faster, man, like more athletic. That's what he needs to do. His game, I don't know. I don't see his game translating that well.
I think to me, like, he's such a smart player is what it comes down to for me. And I just think,
well, that could be the case. I mean, often there's a lot of guys who win with good football IQ. And so perhaps that's something that allows him to stay on the field and be more of that potential third down back. I mean, I guess that makes sense, but Man, I'm looking at the rest of their class.
I mean, at the end of the day, we're talking about a seventh round pick who's going to be behind Kenyon Drake, who's going to be behind Kalen Ballage. And also,
is he going to be behind Kalen Ballage? Because Kalen Ballage is not good.
Listen, I mean, young man has booty cheeks, but there's not much we can do about that. It's interesting because, like, right now I look at the Dolphins and I see a team. You're like, oh, like, Miles Gaskin's going to be a scat back at the next level. Well, guess what? All they've got right now are scat backs. Kalen Ballage is a receiver.
Right.
Kenyon Drake. Kalen Ballage is an outside receiver. He's an X. Kenyon Drake is a slot back. Miles Gaskin's a scat back. Like, what? Where? Who is legitimately running the football? Like, that's what I want to know.
Yeah, maybe they're going to hand it off to Chandler Cox from the fullback position.
Listen, I'm here for it, brother.
Just let the young man pound the football. All right, that is the recap of the AFC East. That was just kind of a little recap. We wanted to make sure that we got all the names out to you and our initial thoughts on them. We're going to be doing a lot of analysis on teams and their rookies as we get into mini camp, more towards July, but certainly over the next couple of weeks, we want to give you some immediate reactions to some draft classes. So these were the first four teams that we did. We're going to be doing a division a day for the next 2 weeks. Very excited about it. We're going to get to every single team, give you all of our picks, give a lot of different grades, where guys fit, what picks we liked, what picks we really didn't, where they should have gone instead, or if they hit a home run. So it's going to be good stuff. Until then, you keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.